You are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the 10th voice. The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
This is The 10th Voice, Kansas City's gay and lesbian radio magazine. The 10th Voice, because you refuse to be silent.
And this is The 10th Voice. I'm Elizabeth Anderson, your host for today. I'm here with Linda Wilson, who just had another fine woman song show. Hi, Linda. And we've got some wonderful guests today. We've got Jerry Harrington, the owner of the Tivoli, and Jamie Rich, who is also with the Tivoli and the Kansas City Gay and Lesbian Film Festival out here now. Brent Husher is going to bring us the 10th Voice calendar. He also is connected with the film festival.
If you're lucky, I will bring the calendar.
I'm feeling lucky.
He may just bring you a colander.
And then the second half of the show, we're going to talk about fostering and adoption with Eric. So first we have Sandra Mead with our LGBT national, state, and local news.
Hi, this is Sandra Mead with a breakdown of some of the LGBT news happening this week. In Hawaii, Governor Neil Abercrombie on Wednesday signed a bill making same-sex marriage legal in that state as of December 2nd. Hawaii is now the 15th state in the union to allow gay marriage. The governor supported the rights of gays and lesbians to wed and had recently called the legislature into a special session to vote on the issue. A working paper by the University of Hawaii Economic Research Organization has estimated that same-sex wedding tourism could bring in another $217 million to that state over a three-year period starting in 2014. In Houston, after the Southern Poverty Law Center met with the South Texas School District, they reversed course and will allow a photo of a transgender student in a tuxedo to appear in the teen's high school yearbook. The La Feria School District had said earlier in the week that the transgender teen, Jaden Laredo, said that his photograph would not be allowed, saying it violated community standards. Laredo grew up female but now identifies as a male. In an agreement reached during the meeting with the SPLC, attorneys for the school district agreed to provide written confirmation that Jaden's tuxedo photo will appear in the yearbook along with the other students in his class. In addition, the district agreed to follow its own corrective policies for cases of gender discrimination and provide training for those involved, along with a comprehensive education program for the school community. The district will also expressly include gender expression in its anti-discrimination policies. In Illinois, a Roman Catholic bishop has announced that he will conduct an exorcism of gay marriage. Bishop Thomas John Paprocki, leader of the Catholic Diocese of Springfield, said on Thursday that he will preside over a prayer service of supplication and exorcism next week to coincide with the ceremony in which Governor Pat Quinn will sign that state's marriage equality bill into law. The State Journal Register reported that Bishop Paprocki said marriage between gays and lesbians is a union that comes from the devil and should be condemned as such. We must pray for deliverance from this evil which has penetrated our state and our church. Quinn, a Catholic, is scheduled to sign the same-sex marriage bill into law next Wednesday, November 20th. Politico reports that MSNBC has suspended Alec Baldwin's talk show for 2 weeks after the actor used abusive and homophobic language towards a news photographer. The photographer approached Baldwin, who was with his wife and child outside his Manhattan apartment Thursday morning, and Baldwin responded by calling him a bleep word, little F word. I'll let you look it up online to find out exactly what he said, among other things. Video of the encounter was posted by TMZ. Baldwin apologized for his conduct in a statement posted on the MSNBC website Friday. What I said and did this week as I was trying to protect my family was offensive and unacceptable, Baldwin said. Behaviors like this undermine the hard-fought rights that I vigorously support. I understand Up Late will be taken off the schedule for tonight and next week. And in Pennsylvania, a federal court challenged to Pennsylvania's 17-year-old law banning recognition of same-sex marriages took an important step forward towards a trial on Friday when a judge rejected two different attempts to block the lawsuit and said the high court treatment of cases involving sex and sexual identity have undergone a sea change. U.S. District Judge John E. Jones III denied the motions to dismiss the lawsuit by Pennsylvania Secretaries of the Department of Health and Revenue and Bucks County Registers of Will. An interesting study coming out of Duke University, nearly half of the houses in worship in the United States now allow gay and lesbian members who are in long-term relationships to be members, while close to 1 in 3 now let gay and lesbian members hold voluntary leadership posts, according to the new study. The statistics, which represent a sharp uptick in acceptance of gay and lesbians in religious communities, were part of Duke University's latest national congregation study. It was previewed this week, but will be released in full early next year. The newly crowned Miss Universe thinks that transgender beauty queens should not be allowed to participate in the Miss Universe pageant. Former Miss Venezuela Gabriela Isler sat down with HuffPost Live Thursday for an interview after winning the 2013 Miss Universe pageant in Russia on November 9th. HuffPost Live host Ahmed Shihab Eldin asked, "Do you think that transgender people should be able to compete in international pageants?" Isler responded, "They should have their own pageant. I think, and maybe they can realize in this pageant, Miss Universe, or other pageants, were made for women." And in Washington, the U.S. Senate has confirmed James Wally Brewster to serve as the country's ambassador to the Dominican Republic. The unanimous vote, which took place Thursday evening, makes Brewster the fifth openly LGBT ambassador confirmed this year, after Daniel Baer, John Barry, James Costos, and Rufus Gifford. And that's a wrap for some of the news stories that came out in the LGBT community this week.
And thank you, Sandra, for the news. And if anyone wants to meet Sandra, I'm pretty sure she's going to be at the Transgender Day of Remembrance on Thursday, the 20th. This is Elizabeth. You're back with the 10th Voice. And the guests right now are Jerry Harrington, owner of the Tivoli, Jamie Rich, who is also at the Tivoli and connected with the Out Here Now Kansas City LGBT Film Festival. And Brent Husher is here. So welcome, all of you. And let's start by saying, what is happening December 31st this year? Jerry?
Okay. Well, roughly the end of the year or a little after, there are basically movie theaters are no longer going to be able to project 35-millimeter film, which is what movie theaters have projected since the beginning of film. And so they're going. We are all, including drive-ins, including art theaters, going to have to transition into digital projection systems. So everything will be digital. It won't be on film anymore.
Well, say a movie theater says, "Well, I'll just show older films."
Even
on.
That, no,
that's not that, possible.
Well, what happens is the studios will still have prints of older movies, but what they don't want to do is rent them out to movie theaters. They'll rent them out to archives, and so they're trying to protect what they have. And you know, somebody said to me, "Well, there will be still some 35-millimeter." Yes, for archives, it'll be for archival purposes, and that's it. But day-to-day movie theaters, which basically, though I'm not like commercial theaters, I'm still a day-to-day movie theater, 35 millimeter is going to be gone very quickly.
And I've had people ask me, well, how long has this been in the pipeline?
Oh, it's been in the pipeline for years. I mean, this has slowly been doing, 10 years. Slowly it's been coming. And we've already converted one of our screens to digital. And we have to do the two others. I mean, part of the tricky thing about it is, and why we waited longer, is because, one, as we all know, any electronic components, as you wait, they get cheaper and they get better. And so we were, holding on because, what we paid for a year ago is a little bit cheaper than it was. and it's a little bit better. And these 35 millimeter projectors can last for 100 years. Digital projectors last 10 years.
Oh, that's a startling fact.
At most.
Jamie? Yeah,
but one of the things that your friends probably don't realize is that this is the biggest change since in film history since the advent of sound. I mean, Jerry was talking about this with somebody the other day. You know, I mean, we've had film since the very beginning. It's been on film reels, and then suddenly this is sort of the end of that era.
I read a Rolling Stone article in early September was when it was written, said 10,000 theaters might go dark. Is that overstating the case?
There's a lot of drive-ins. There's a lot of small independent theaters, and there's a lot of, you know, small-town theaters. Yes, I mean, I forget what town it is, near Kansas City, and they raised enough for a down payment on one projector.
Yeah, Edwardsville.
Oh, was it Edwardsville?
And how much money are we talking about?
Well, for me, it's $70,000 a screen, so... You know, and by the time it's all said and done, it'll be at least a $210,000 for the Tivoli because we have three screens. And so we've converted one, and we're doing a Kickstarter campaign to raise the majority of the rest of the $140,000 we need. And so that's the plan, and it looks like it's... We're knocking on wood, but it's a good possibility it'll happen.
Well, tell me a little about the way that Tivoli has diversified its offerings in the past, say,
years. You know, the film business has changed. I mean, I've been in this business. The Tivoli's been in existence for 30 years, and I've been in it the film business longer than that. And when we first opened, we were what was called a revival theater, where we would show old movies. They change every day. And then it slowly we started showing new art films, and then that became it. And now the business is changing a little bit. We're still showing first-run art movies, but we're also doing special events and partnerships with other organizations. And we're doing digital makes the possibility of doing broadcast from around the world. I mean, you know, we do National Theater Live. We're going to start doing the Royal Shakespeare Theater. We do Royal Opera, we do Bolshoi Ballet, we do a lot of different things that are they're made possible by digital, some of them live when they're actually being performed, some of them are previously recorded in the last few months, and so digital opens that world, because film, you couldn't do it.
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot of positives about this. It's just the expense.
And I actually have a question for you, Jamie, and that is, how does digital affect the film festival?
Well, I think it makes things more accessible because, you know, for years, you know, filmmakers would have to be able to do prints. Remember when we were in the early days of doing a film festival, we would used to have to, you know, get films to be... One of the reasons why we went where we did with the Gay and Lesbian Film Festival was because, truthfully, it was between two major film festivals, one in New York and one in San Francisco. And as the prints were going back and forth, we were able to catch them. Well, now as the more filmmakers are getting their work done, digital opens things up a lot more so that... I love one of the quotes that Jerry used this past week, which was that, you know, we are... The Tivoli kind of stands now as a community cinema that sort of celebrates the art of film. And it makes the art of film in festivals a lot easier. I was talking with a good friend of mine who's with the Kansas International Film Festival, and they were talking about how, you know, this opens up opportunities for them, the digital equipment in the theaters where they do their festival, for having filmmakers to just simply send these things on thumb drives, and, you know, they can create their own trailers. As you know, we've never had the ability to be able to do any forward promoting of our films on the festival because sometimes that's on DVDs, sometimes that's on prints, but this... I think Jerry would probably agree with this. It makes there are many good things about this transition to digital because it opens things up for more people because, you know, it's greener. You don't have to do prints. You don't have to, you know, ship things around. And it even, if you will, for the type of programs that are done at the Tivoli, it makes it even more accessible.
And more, not only more diverse and accessible, but just there's a lot more. It creates that we can do a lot more. And it looks great.
That was my next question. Is there going to be a drop in quality? Will film goers know a difference?
No. I think it's a better quality myself. I mean, there's some people who argue the image is 35 is still better, but you're looking for the differences. The sound, sound. It was on a side of the film, so now it's digital. It's much more full and beautiful and more detail, and so it's an improvement. It's an improvement. The difficulty for theater owners, like I said, is this is not going to last forever, and you cannot sort of band-aid it together until the technician comes out. You know, if something goes wrong, we need it's a real electronic expert, and there's going to be software updates and it's a whole different world, which so far we've navigated very well.
I actually have a question for Brent now, and that is, let's say independent theaters go dark all over North America. What kinds of places will that affect the most?
Well, as the expert of all things...
That's why I asked you.
Wikipedia. I honestly, as a... I'll put on my film lover's hat. I think it really will have an impact. I looked at the article that you posted today on the Rolling Stones article, and what I thought when I read that, 10,000 theaters is what they quoted, not being able to do the things we do. I mean, I look at our community, I look at what the Tivoli has been able to do and offer us, and I think, wow, all that because these owners are having to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars. And my question, I'll bump it back to Jerry or Jamie, is why why are the studios not helping the community-based theaters, but they will for the other theaters?
Okay. There is a program where theaters can borrow money. It's a middleman. They borrow money from someone, and then the studios, as the theater plays one of their films, say it's 20th Century Fox, and you play one of their movies, that week they will pay a little bit back towards your loan. It's not, it's not even 50-50, but it helps. But the Tivoli, we do film classes, we do, film series, we do festivals, we do broadcasts, we do all sorts of things that break that, what happens is we can't always play a film every showtime for every day, and that's the rule. The whole complex has to comply to that rule where if you play a movie, you have to play it every showtime, every day, and they go week to week. So we don't fit into that pattern. So there's other independent theaters that do, so they can partake in that loan program. But the other problem is even with that loan program, for some theaters that I know of, not in Kansas City but elsewhere, they can't even really participate in that because it's still a huge expense. When you're paying 70% and the studios are going to slowly pay back 30% of what you borrowed.
And
there's a lot of nonprofit independent theaters across the country that do a very good job, but that one-time expense, unless they have big donors, that they're in the same position that anyone else is in. You have to pay the money back. You're paying money, a loan with interest, and so that's a burden. People don't understand that's a burden on small businesses, and so you have to decide how to navigate this. I mean, a lot of people have become nonprofits and they raise money through donations. We are for-profit, so Kickstarter was created for individuals and for for-profits to raise funds for creative projects, and they've decided that movie theaters are a creative project. And so a lot of theaters have gone this way and been very successful. I mean, people know what it is, what it's for, and why it's happening, and it's happening to everyone. No one can escape digital conversion if they're in the movie biz.
You mentioned the Kickstarter, and in the past few weeks that the Tivoli has been doing this campaign, people have been telling their stories, and Jamie, I know that you were taping some of those, and they've been putting comments on Facebook and putting comments online. This is for both Jamie and Jerry. What has that meant to you?
Oh.
You start.
Oh.
It's,
I get emotional. I mean, it's very, very emotional for me because I had no idea. I mean, we started this campaign basically Halloween night, and we've raised over $100,000 since then, which I had no idea. I had no idea. I mean, I didn't know. You know, it's hard to.
And people have been telling stories about how they met their significant other. You know?
Right. I think the greatest thing that's happened is that as we've done the Save the Tivoli campaign, people have stepped forward to share their memories and why that means to, you know, something to them. Whether or not it was a film student who was first exposed to great film through a class that they took at UMKC, somebody was saying that they had, you know, played hooky from school to go watch Trainspotting. There's going to be an event coming up at the Tivoli, and one of the where we're going to be showing some of the trailers from the years past there, and I can still remember when I went to see The Crying Game there and the audible gasps, you know, during that moment of the reveal during The Crying Game. You know, it was what was going on. But everybody has come up and shared whether or not it was their favorite film. And I think that it's that sense of community that is so different. I remember, you know, having done the film festivals over the years, talking to Kansas City filmmakers who said, you know, it was so important for me to come back and have my movie shown here. Because this is where I first saw films that I couldn't see somewhere else. It's about those emergent voices and those films that you hadn't seen. And again, it's that connection to people in the community who have that sort of same reaction. And you don't hear from that very often. It's been one of those nice things where you've seen people from the community really step forward and say, you know what, this matters to me. And this matters to me because this has touched me in some way. You've heard me say this in years past. One of the things that I love about a festival is that film as an art form is a communal experience, different from live theater, but it's still something that we share together. Yes, you can watch videos on YouTube. Yes, you can watch movies on Netflix or whatever, but there's something unmistakable about sitting in a darkened room, watching a movie with a like-minded audience. It is somewhat transformational. And what's nice about this particular campaign is that we've heard from people from all over the community. You know, people who've grown. I mean, how long have you been doing this, Jerry? For 112 years?
30 years. And I'm 61, by the way. The Kansas City Star raised my age 3 years on Thursday. So,
well, it's a fine age, I would know.
Yeah. Oh, so you know how wonderful it is to be 61.
Yes, I do.
It's 60 wonderful.
But now, and it's also the interesting thing is a lot of people have said to me, the campaign. They're happy and willing and enthusiastic to give because they're a part of something that's positive and they're doing something for themselves and the community and for us, and they're going to keep something going. And you know, that's, and you can see it. The wonderful thing about Kickstarter is you can just go on there and see whether it's climbed and, you know, how much. And I mean, it's a whoever started Kickstarter, they're brilliant. They're incredible. They thought it through really well.
And I've had the experience of walking up to, say, Whistler's bookstore and it's closed. And all of a sudden, it's a shot in the heart. It's like, I didn't get to say goodbye.
Well,
and this is not saying goodbye. This is saying hello again.
And also, that was, as Jamie knows, and I think other people knew, it was a very hard decision for me. I really thought about this for a year and hard for the last 6 months because my attitude was I could have just, as a business owner, said, I'm closing. I can't do this. And Kickstarter has allowed me to say, well, I don't need to close. I mean, I'd only close because I can't afford to do the conversion. So let's ask. Cynthia Levin at the Unicorn said, Jerry, people don't know you need help unless you ask. And so I said, okay, I'll try this. And if it doesn't work, well, then this people have spoken. But if it does, then we can continue and we can do more. And it'll be, I mean, stuff coming up next year, there's some incredible stuff. It's a much better year next year. I can just feel it.
Well, what you just said, it was actually my next point, because some business owners, they're in it for the business, or they're burned out, or they just don't care. But you really are a movie buff.
Yeah, I love movies, and I love showing movies. And I love going, oh, this is a great movie. I've been watching a lot of movies lately that are about to come out. A lot of foreign films, because there's a lot of, you know, there's like 300 potential Oscar nominees in the foreign film category. So I've been watching a lot. And they're really wonderful, and I can't wait to show some of them. You know, some of them, you know, they're a little esoteric, but some of them are really wonderful.
What's one of the long runs that you've had that's particularly memorable? I remember March of the Penguins, for instance.
The most memorable long run for me, I mean, it's just a movie that I love. And this was the little theater, was Room with a View. That was just...
I remember going to
that. That was a long run, and I love that. I love that movie to this day.
That's a beautiful movie.
And, you know, I'm happy, and it helped. It was the beginning of a long and wonderful relationship with Ismail Merchant and Jim Ivory. So, you know, because they made a movie here,
right,
and they came and we had their big retrospective, and they actually were very helpful and very wonderful.
Did they do Mr. and Mrs. Bridge?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So,
and then they
yeah.
were here, and Ismail came to me because people had told me I was the guy to go to here, and I went to retrospective, and I said, okay. He came, and Jim Ivory and everybody involved with the movie showed up at least once, and we did it for like 3 weeks. And it was one of the great things I've ever done. And the other thing connected with Ismail is that he paid for the restoration of a lot of films of an Indian filmmaker named Satyajit Ray. And that was the highlight of my career. It was 9 weeks. That was the absolute highlight of my career.
I don't think I've ever seen you so jubilant. This is great.
Yeah, no, that was, you know, there's a few others. But they're all interesting. They're always about older movies.
Mm-hmm. And Jamie, what about you?
Well, I was going to say, well, that kindness from the community is really what has been so nice to sort of, you know, step into as people, as we've launched the Save the Tivoli campaign, just to make sure that people could have that voice and to share those stories. I have, you know, so many, but I think, you know, I remember once when we did the movie You Should Meet My Son, you know, and we had, that the director had stewed over that moment and was unsure whether or not he was even going to do the film. And I convinced him to come here. You know, we had, because of the Tivoli, an opportunity to be able to bring in filmmakers and to do films for a film festival of our size. And when he turned around, it was the very first time that movie had ever been shown, he turned around and the audience stood up, that sold-out crowd stood up and just supported him. It just, you know, that's that type of experience that real community cinema can provide. And I think, you know, people have been sharing their favorite films or their favorite movie moments. And I think it's tapping into that. And that's what this Save the Tivoli campaign has been trying to ensure continues, because it can continue when, you know, once this hurdle is jumped.
And the website is, and cleverly named, I might add,
SaveTheTivoli.com, and that takes you directly to our Kickstarter page, and it'll prompt you on how to go along and be a part of this campaign.
And what is the Tivoli's website, in case someone wants to know what's showing there right now?
TivoliKC.com.
And there's also Facebook.
Yes, there is. There's Facebook, and there's Twitter, and oh my, we're in the social media age, and you know, like never before. I mean, our Facebook numbers have just soared since November 1st.
I bet. Jamie, what is the website for the film festival?
It is Out Here Now, and we're probably going to be bringing news of some films. So if you go to outherenow.com, they'll be able to see what's coming up, some film festival events for the fall, so, or actually early winter.
So SaveTheTivoli.com and OutHereNow.com. Brent, any final words?
I have one. Just now, I just looked, and you're up to $101,485, so that's just about over $28,000 more to go.
That's right.
So lots of people are involved with this. Do I see, like, over 1,000 people
almost
have given?
1,000 people.
I just think that's amazing, the numbers of people that have done that, so...
It is.
Very
it's
humbling.
Amazing.
Theaters are really important, I know, to small communities that center around the community, but they're also important to the heart of Midtown in a large community. You know, it's a neighborhood, too.
Right.
Yeah, and that's the thing. We're, you know, most of the people that come here, you know, live, you know, between the river and, say, Waldo. Or north of the river. Well, you know, my philosophy has always been everyone in this city is my potential customer.
Harry, can I add? Before I moved here, when I lived in Springfield, Missouri, my very first movie in Kansas City was a drive up to your theater to see Hedwig and the Angry Inch. So it's much bigger than the river.
And I might add that in the late 80s, I went to see Desert Hearts to see if it spoke to me, and it was, uh-oh.
And I might add, we've had donors as far away as Spain and Ohio. But to put those together
And there's a lot of people that live in towns and cities around here that come all the time. They drive, and there's some people, couples I know, that they'll come on a Friday and see every movie we have, and then and some people even stay overnight. They make it a weekend. I mean, it's just, it's really been incredible. I mean, it's because, you know, you do your thing, you do your business, and you're just plodding along day to day, and you don't notice that anyone really notices you.
Yeah, and you know they come, but do they really care? And this.
Yeah, well, you know they care because they are buying a ticket, but this is beyond. I mean, this is really like, yes, we want you here, and that's. It's so, you know. I mean, of course, it's gratifying, but it's more than that for me. I mean, it's just like I said. I mean, I got emotional. I do. I mean, I get emotional like two or three times a day. I mean, it's like I have to sort of run to my office because I don't want somebody seeing me crying, because it's like I'm not sad. I'm just moved. And I'm actually happy in my own way. But, you know, it's incredible.
Thank you so much for coming on the air and talking about the Tivoli and the campaign and the digital conversion. And we're going to hear a song now by Suede called Love Me Like They Do in the Movies. I picked that just for you.
Oh, that's great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Support for KKFI provided by Santora's Pizza, 3834 Main, Kansas City, Missouri. Open daily with late-night delivery featuring pizza by the slice, pizza pies, pasta, and sandwiches. Pick up or delivery at 816-756-1616.
You're back with the 10th Voice, and I am here with Eric Charles Gallo, and we're going to talk about fostering and adoption. And I wanted to say you and your husband were just featured in a Huffington Post article. Would you tell about that?
We were. Thank you for having us, Elizabeth. Or me, I guess. My husband's at home with the kids. So we got contacted by Raise a Child and the Huffington Post to do this. It's National Adoption Month. November is National Adoption Month. And we got contacted to do this article on our family and kind of our journey through from foster care to adoption, and we were so honored to be asked to do that and then get to talk to the Huffington Post and kind of put foster care and adoption on the map for LGBT families. So we were really excited about that opportunity.
I know a lot of people read Huffington Post. That's a huge audience worldwide. So, and why did they contact you? You're affiliated with an organization, is that correct?
So, yeah. So I actually work for Midwest Foster Care and Adoption Association. It's funny how our journey through, Lewis and I, when we started this journey, we had been together 3 years, and we had looked for multiple ways to adopt and found our way to MFCAA as one of their licensed families. And through that, so I kind of came into the work on the other side. So it wasn't the kids that, it wasn't the work that brought me to the kids, it was the kids that brought me to the work. And so I worked in corporate America for 10 years, and we adopted through our journey. We fostered and we adopted, and we still continue to foster, even though we have adopted. Lori Ross is our president and CEO, and I said, you know, I'm really tired of beating my head against a corporate rock. I want to do something that makes a difference. And she, of course, said, come on board. I have lots of work for you to do. And it'll be a year in January that I've been with MFCAA, and it has been the most amazing experience of my life. So not only do I get to live, you know, every day with these amazing kids that have entered into the system and then come into our house and come into our lives and our hearts, I get to help other people experience that and go through that journey, LGBT families and, you know, and
children. And I love talking to people who light up when they're talking about their work, and that's certainly true for you. How long has the organization been around? When did it start?
So MFCAA started in 1998, just around a kitchen table. MFCAA was an advocacy group, a support group for families who were taking care of kids that were just, you know, sometimes these kids have very unique challenges, and so families that were caring for these kids needed a way to get together and just exchange ideas, exchange suggestions. And so that's really, MFCAA was formed around a kitchen table, and then moved into a church, and then moved to the organization that we are now. And actually in 2008 is when we started licensing families. We do, so we have a lot of work that we do. We have a food pantry for our members. We have a clothing closet for our members. We have lots of youth programs, and there's lots of different ways to get involved with MFCAA.
And what are the ages? Does it start with infancy? I mean,
zero. And so we, so our families have kids from zero to, and now some kids 21, 22 that are entering into the system. There's roughly 104,000 kids in the United States that are in, that are waiting to be adopted or in foster care. And so the opportunity for families to bring some of these little kids and bigger kids into their lives is there. And we just really, we've been doing the work for so long. And since we started licensing families in 2008, we've always had LGBT families. But we hadn't really had a way to say, you know, to the LGBT community, we're here, you can foster in the state of Missouri, you can adopt in the state of Missouri, and in some counties, you can adopt jointly. You don't have to go through the first parent, second parent adoption. And Lewis and I were one of the first families in Missouri to adopt on that joint petition in Jackson County. And so we're honored to just be able to share our story, and every chance that we get to do it, we love to. I tell people I'm an open book all the time.
Congratulations.
It's what I love, so.
And it must be tough at times, especially when you were working in the corporate world. Mm-hmm. There had to have been emergencies come up. And, you know, have you ever run into any roadblocks or obstacles because you're a gay couple?
Really, I have to say we have honestly had the most amazing journey. I know that it's not the case for all couples. We have really had, we have supportive family. We have supportive friends. We're in a supportive community. School-wise, our kids, they go to a school where they actively ask us, how are we referred to? We don't want to offend, and we don't want to exclude your kids in any way. So how do we do that? And so our school district has been awesome. The daycare that our kiddos is in is awesome. Family and friends. So we really haven't run into those roadblocks. So every once in a while we're out in the community and people ask us funny questions, but it's just to be expected. It's kind of what happens when you have any type of family that's blended, whether it's a transracial family, whether it's a gay family. You know, we hear sometimes, oh, it's mom's day out, and we're like, well, there's no mom, so it's just us with the kids. And so we get that a lot. But it's really been a great experience, and that's honestly why we stayed in it. We had planned to have our, you know, two kids, 2.5 kids, like every other couple, and then and adopt and be out of it. And after we adopted our three, we have twin boys and a little girl that are 4 and 3. And after we adopted them, we stopped and we paused and we said, you know, there are just too many kids out there, and we have the capacity and we have the space to help care for these kids and continue to do the work that we fell in love with. And so we stayed in, and you know, we have 5 kids total. 3 of them are adopted, 2 of them are foster kids, and we love them all just the same. We're just so excited to be able to care for them. So,
and where do you go to find support with other parents who are, you know, similar to you? Do you work with other groups?
We do. We partner, and a lot of our LGBT families are also MAFA families, which is the Alternative Families Association. There we go. I'll get there. So we do. We work with MAFA, and we do a lot of our families do a lot of events with the MAFA family. We also have our own support group, the Mamas and the Papas for LGBT families. And just so we really sit down and we talk about those fun challenges that we have, managing the holidays, managing the stressors, and even sometimes managing the negativity that you could face. And so we talk about all of those issues at Midwest Foster Care and Adoption Association through the Mamas and Papas. So there are ways to reach out for support groups, and you can always contact us at MFCAA, and we're there for you. So,
and say the acronym again.
MFCAA, which is Midwest Foster Care and Adoption Association. We're actually located in Independence. And we have, I think everybody talks about their website. We have our website, which is mfcaa.org. We have Facebook as well, and you can find us on MFCAA, our Facebook page as
and
well.
And so. Some of the kids that your organization has helped must be adults now. Have some of them come back?
We do. We have so lots of our families now have adult kids who, and some of them, I work with amazing people every day, and I work with a couple people who were in the foster care system, and they found their forever homes and they found their forever families, and now they've come back to do this work. And those are the times where I know that their parents get that reward, and they get that rewarding feeling, because sometimes, you know, some of our kiddos don't always say thank you. And so it's when we've seen them grow and we've seen them develop and we've seen them become productive citizens, which is all you can really ask for out of a kid. Those are the times that you get to look back and you feel that sense of pride. You get to feel that sense of we've made it, we're there, you know, our kids are being productive citizens. So yeah, we see a lot of kiddos come back, and we also have opportunities for foster kids who have aged out of the system or who have been adopted and now are adults to tell their story. So there's lots of ways to get involved with MFCAA. We have lots of things.
Great.
So.
And speaking of telling their story, could you tell a little about Raise a Family?
So Raise a Child.
Oh, Raise a Child.
Yeah, Raise a Child. No, it's
it's
awesome.
A family.
It is a family. It's a family affair. So Raise a Child is an organization that is partnered with the HRC. They're part of the All Children's All Family Models. MFCAA is the only agency, foster care adoption agency, in the state of Missouri that holds the HRC Seal of Excellence for All Children's All Families. So we were contacted by Raise a Child, one of the HRC's partners, to do an event, and really it's about promoting LGBT foster care and adoption. We were one of 12 agencies in the United States to get that honor. We have an event coming up on November the 21st. So November 22nd is National Adoption Day. November 21st is our Raise a Child event. So it's really a kickoff and kind of a promotion event to really talk to LGBT families and meet with LGBT families to let them know that they can foster and adopt. Comedian Alec Mappa will be here. Him and his husband adopted through the foster care system in the state of California. So we're very honored to have him come and tell his story. We'll also have a panel of LGBT parents from the Kansas City area and actually Kansas come in and talk about their journey and kind of that local at home experience of what they experience. My husband and I will be there, and there'll be some people from the HRC, and then lots of just people in the community. So it's really going to be a great opportunity to meet the supportive, nurturing community that is foster care and adoption.
And would you tell again when it is and the time and the location?
Okay, so the event is November the 21st. Again, it's from 6 to 8, I believe, and it's at Studio B, which is at 2016 Main. We ask that all anybody interested in coming, just go to our website and register. You can register on the MFCAA website under the events page. It's the Raise a Child link. Or you can go to raiseachild.org and on their Nation Builder page, RSVP for the event. We'd love to have as many people come out as possible.
And you were telling me earlier before the show that for LGBT teenagers who, say, have been kicked out of their homes, you're going to have a place to refer them to, is that correct?
So really, this is the beginning for MFCAA to really introduce ourselves to the LGBT community and say that we are open, we are affirming, and we have families that are open and affirming. And we know that there are lots of kiddos that have been displaced because of who they are. And we want to provide safe and open, affirming homes for them if they've entered into the foster care system. And so that's what we do. We really help our partners, our agency partners, look for supportive homes. And then also in the upcoming year, we are really working toward having a place for LGBT kids to come that have entered the system that may not have found their forever family or may not have found their a foster family, a facility that's like home that they can come to, that they can that they can feel supported, and we can get them the resources, support that they need. And all kids, not just the L and the G, which is what happens a lot. We've really had and seen the need for our trans kids who don't necessarily have.
I work with the Like Me Lighthouse, and that is certainly true. Trans kids don't always have the support that they need or a place to go or friends to be with.
Right, and we're looking at our facility. We're looking at naming it Brandon's House. Brandon was a kiddo who took his own life because he was not supported, and he's a local kid who took his own life, and he wasn't, you know, in a supportive place, and there were some mental health challenges, obviously, but all of those things we feel like we can address and we can do better, and it's what we do every day, and it's really the passion that all of us at MFCA have for the kids that we care for.
So. You must work then with Kansas City Anti-Violence Project, is that true?
We do. We have recently met with Kansas City Anti-Violence Project to talk about how we can all partner together, because really the work that we do, it takes a village and it takes a team of people, and we are always hungry for how we can help and who we can, you know, send kids to or have kids come to us so that because we have Kansas City Anti-Violence Project has the unique ability to, they get the calls for kids who have been abused, who in any way, you know, whether it's dating violence or whether it's violence from their parents, and they need a place to have people to refer them to, and we needed a place to go, or we needed a place to reach out to be able to get those kids. We've also had some amazing community partnerships. Social and John Coop and the Flow Show have agreed to help with us, help raise, you know, funds for our work that we're doing around LGBT kids. So we're super excited about that.
And you have grants too. You've had grant support.
So our organization, I mean, really, we run on community support and then the support that we get from grant raising. That's how we are able to do the work that we do. Community support is huge. Having people who just, you know, so we have a lot of people who may not want to foster, right? And they don't necessarily want to adopt, but they want to do something. And so that community support is key to us. I mean, donations to the clothes closet, all of those kind of things are huge, and we appreciate them all. So,
well, I think your children and many others are fortunate to have you, and also your husband and the others in your group.
And we're the thing, everybody tells us all the time, well, they're so lucky to have you. We're so lucky to have them. It's really changed. It's changed our life, and it brought a sense of calm and kind of they've just really changed who we were. I mean, we were a single couple and we had never had kids, and our first, you know, our first kiddos, you know, we helped reunify them with their parents, but it changed us as people, and just like it was awesome.
Can I ask a question?
Absolutely.
You said that you brought you a sense of calm. I mean, that isn't
sounds
kids,
crazy, right?
Kids and calm? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not experienced it.
So our kids are...
Kids are happiness, but I don't...
Happiness and a calm and peace. I think that, you know, being able to every day have these little people to come home to and know that you're doing the right thing, it does give you a sense of calm. And while some days are really, really crazy... It's those moments that Lewis and I can sit back and the kids have gone to bed and we can just enjoy where our life has taken us and mm-hmm. Elizabeth said, you know, I light up and it's true, I do, and it's because of them that I get to light up every day.
So, and there's nothing like a kid smiling at you and feeling really, you know. A kid's smile can just melt you.
Yeah, it does.
It doesn't take much.
I love coming home from a long day of and you know, not, and some days we hear really crazy stories. So I love coming home at the end of the day and having these five little people yell, "Papa, you're home!" And it's like the best. It's the best ending to a long crazy day that anybody could ever have. So.
Well, thank you so much for coming by. Would you tell the website again where someone could find more information?
So for more information on our organization, you can go to mfca.org. For the Raise a Child event, you can go to mfca.org under on the events page. Under Raise a Child, you could go to raiseachild.org, which is the national website. Or you can find us on Facebook. You can find me on Facebook. I'm Eric Charles Gallo. I'm not opposed to people friending me on Facebook to do the work that we do. So, awesome.
And that is one event on Thursday night, the Raise a Child event. And we have other events as well happening all over. And that's Mr. Brent Husher.
Well, hello. I loved hearing everything that came about on today's show. What a fantastic show. Thanks a lot for being here in the studio.
Thanks for having us.
Well, for everyone. So let me just start with, we talked about the Tivoli earlier. There's a film playing through Thursday that's 1 week engagement only, God Loves Uganda. Some of us got to see that at the Kansas International Film Festival, and there's a local connection because the International House of Prayer is featured in this documentary. So there's that happening. On Wednesday, November 20th, not Thursday, is Wednesday again, the KC Transgender Day of Remembrance.
I did get the date right.
Just the wrong day of the week. But anyway, that'll be at 7:30 at the Nichols Parkway Fountain. Next week on the 10th Voice, Sandra's show, the Trans Talk edition of the 10th Voice, will be Spouses of Trans People. We talk a lot to trans folk on that show, but this time we get to hear the experience of being a spouse of someone who identifies as trans. Sounds pretty interesting, right, Elizabeth?
It does.
That moves us right into December, which there are all sorts of holiday concerts coming up. The Heartland Men's Chorus will have their annual holiday concert, excuse me, folks, on Friday, December 6th. Saturday,
and that will be Joe Netto's last concert as director.
It is. It is. As we all heard, he's actually accepted a position and is living in L.A. right now, but he'll be coming back to finish up this last show. But that'll be happening at the Folly as usual, and that's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday show. There is a benefit for GLAMA, the Gay and Lesbian Archives of Mid-America, happening out at Corinthian Hall at the Kansas City Museum. That'll be happening on December 12th, 7 to 9. You can get more information at on our website or GLAMA's website. On Saturday, December 14th and 15th, the Kansas City Women's Chorus will be having their holiday concert, I'll Be Home for Christmas. That's at the Folly on Saturday at 8 p.m. and Sunday at 4 p.m. On Sunday, December 15th, in addition to the Women's Chorus, we have the Mid-American Freedom Band, and they'll be doing Holidays Around the World. That's going to be back at the Unity Temple on the plaza, and that's from 3 to 5. That's all I have on my calendar today, but that's okay, right?
Well, I also want to mention that for Summer Osborne's fans, she is going to be playing with two musical artists from the West Coast at the Uptown Arts Theater, and I believe it's December 18th, but I'll add the information to the 10th Voice calendar.
But what a good time to mention to folks. If you have events that we should know about, let us know. You can do that at our Facebook page, which is just Facebook/10thVoice, or you can go to KKFI's website and look at the audio archive and go to the 10th Voice from that link and get contact information for us.
And as Brent mentioned, next week is Sandra Mead's Trans Talk edition of the 10th Voice. And the show today is followed by This Way Out, national news and international news, and then Wings and Sharon Lockhart with Every Woman. So that's our show for today.